And now, it's time for our weekly news round, Lutheran Radio News with Paul Hill.
Churches must conduct checks on asylum seekers as rigorous as those for school applications in order to protect against scam conversions, senior members of parliament have said. Tim Loughton, a former minister and member of the Home Affairs Committee, said churches should overhaul their rules to require asylum seekers wanting to convert to attend services for at least 6 months before they are considered for baptism. He said Church of England guidance on migrants seeking to convert was weighted too much towards helping them make their asylum claim more credible rather than asking questions about whether it was genuine. It is understood the Home Affairs Committee is to investigate the role of churches in the asylum process after Abdul Azedi, the Clapham chemical attack suspect, was granted asylum after claiming to have converted to Christianity despite having two convictions in the UK for sex assault and indecent exposure. Friends of Azedi, an illegal immigrant, told The Telegraph that he was a good Muslim who bought half a halal sheep every fortnight despite his apparent conversion. James Cleverly, the Home Secretary, is reviewing the facts of the case to establish whether the law needs to be overhauled to prevent such abuses. Mr. Loughton said, "If you are trying to get your child into a good local Catholic school, you have to go through all sorts of hoops. You have to attend church on a regular basis and tick all sorts of boxes. People still game the system, but there is much more robust management of the system to get into a church school. Catholic schools generally require a baptism certificate. Some demand that parents provide a certificate of Catholic practice as proof that they are practicing Catholic family. Typically, this would require the child and parent to have attended Sunday Mass and Holy Days on obligation for the past 5 years. Mr. Loughton said, "One of the suggestions is that there should be a 6 month moratorium between someone arriving at the church and becoming part of the church. There is nothing remotely like that in the Church of England guidance for dealing with asylum seeker conversions. It needs to set down some thresholds, targets and barriers that would give them greater satisfaction that this is a genuine person." The demands come after The Telegraph revealed how judges have raised concerns that some unquestioning church leaders are being duped by insincere asylum seekers converting to Christianity to avoid deportation. Immigration Tribunal decisions show that the Home Office has repeatedly raised questions in court about the extent to which clergy are probing the true intentions of migrants seeking to convert from Islam to Christianity. Migrants can claim asylum based on their conversion to a new religion if they face persecution in their home country because of their new faith. In some cases, religious ministers agree to support claims, as happened with Azedi on his third asylum appeal. At the weekend, the Right Reverend Julie Francis Dakini, the Bishop of Chelmsford, said the church was willing to review its guidance for priests to see if it can be enhanced to guide clergy on dealing with asylum seekers who wish to be baptised. The Church of England will consider banning parishioners who bully their vicars. The proposal comes as a string of devastating and unacceptable instances have emerged in papers submitted to the General Synod, the Church's law-making body, which is set to convene later this month. The papers cite examples of vicars being hounded out of office by aggressive congregants, with some parishes having a reputation for breaking clergy, leaving their vacancies impossible to fill. As a result, Synod will hear measures in favour of legal sanctions for bullying, including the possibility of disqualification from holding office within the church, as well as a new code of conduct for parochial church councils, PCC. The calls for a new code of conduct come amid claims that meetings descend into aggressive, psychologically damaging and physically threatening behaviour, with parishioners slamming fists on tables, continually interrupting when others speak, withholding keys to storerooms, blocking each other on email, and repeatedly trolling and harassing others by printing out messages after being blocked. The Archdeacon of Blackburn, the Venerable Mark Ireland, called for the synod to recognise that bullying is unacceptable behaviour within the Church of God, whether by clergy or lay people, and for it to be tackled. He also warned against the unfairness that arises from clergy being subject to penalties for bullying that include prohibition and removal from office, while there is no means of disqualifying a church warden, PCC member or other lay officer who is guilty of bullying from holding office. As a result, he said that they too should be disqualified from holding office. He added that the impact of bullying and harassment can be devastating on mental health, on physical health, on the breakdown of relationships, and the blighting of local Christian communities. If a church warden or lay officer is exercising controlling or bullying behaviour, it is not just the priest who is the victim. The rest of the PCC and the congregation also experience the same behaviour and are frightened to speak out or stand up to a person who is abusing their power or role. Indeed, there are some parishes which bishops are reluctant to recommend to prospective applicants, knowing that a series of previous incumbents have been hounded out of office. He added, "I have been inundated with distressing correspondence from clergy and clergy spouses who have been subjected to bullying and harassment. At the same time, there are many disturbing examples of lay officers bullying other lay members of the congregation." The Reverend Dr. Sarah Batts-Neal from the Chelmsford Diocese also called for the new PCC Code of Conduct, which would consider the possibility of a disciplinary process for removal from the PCC. She warned that some meetings take place in a psychologically unsafe environment for both lay and ordained participants, warning that the imperative to forgiveness can sometimes normalise bad behaviour when it is seen to be consequence-free. She added that a PCC meeting should not be psychologically damaging or physically threatening environment for any participant. Aggressive behaviour in meetings, slamming fists on tables and continually interrupting when others speak, or outside meetings, emailing repeatedly and when blocked on email, printing or delivering copies of a message. Repeatedly poor behaviour sidetrack meetings, waste the time and energy of all participants and detract from the church's ability to share the gospel and nurture disciples, she added. In one parish cited as an example, a PCC member refused to share the keys to the cupboard that stored all the resources for children's work. Thus, while the dispute was ongoing, no children's work was able to happen. William Nye, the church's secretary general and most senior lay official, said that if evidence showed that there was bad behaviour or unchristian behaviour in parochial church councils, that would be a serious issue. He added that the church had been looking at encouraging people to treat one another better rather than devising punitive sanctions against bad behaviour. The motions from both the Archdeacon and the Diocese of Chelmsford will be heard and debated at the convening of Synod later this month. A priest who said the Scottish Catholic Church was run by a powerful gay mafia has claimed he has been bullied because he is not allowed back to work until he apologises. Father Matthew Despard, who made the incendiary allegations in a self-published book in 2013, was cleared for a possible return to duties by the Vatican in 2016. However, he says he remains banned from carrying out his work because the church in Scotland is demanding an apology, which he refuses to make, claiming he was telling the truth. Father Despard was suspended from his parish at St John Ogilvie's in Blantyre, South Lanarkshire, over his book Priesthood in Crisis. He took his case to the Roman Rota in Italy in 2016, an internal Catholic court system. It paved the way for his return to work if he withdrew the book, which he has done. However, the Bishop of Motherwell, Joseph Toll, said he must say sorry for the hurt and offence he had caused. But Father Despard insisted his claims had been vindicated by revelations about the Scottish Church. Cardinal Keith O'Brien, at one time the Catholic Church's most senior cleric in Britain, resigned in 2013 amid claims of sexual misconduct against several priests dating back to the 1980s. "I have privately asked Bishop Toll again and again to return to a parish, but have been ignored," Father Despard told the BBC. "It's unjust. I'm still waiting here. I have no avenues left but to speak out publicly. I feel I've been systematically bullied and silenced by the church. Bishop Toll now wants me to publicly apologise, but I don't see the reason to say sorry. I'm not sorry for telling the truth. I feel vindicated by some of the things that have come to light about historic practices within the Catholic Church in Scotland." the church disputed his account, saying it had asked for a personal apology. A spokesman declined to clarify who he was asked to apologise to. Father Despard was evicted from his parish home following court action in 2014. He lives in the flat that is paid for by the church. He remains officially employed by the church, but his suspension means he is unable to carry out certain religious duties, such as saying Mass. He added, "In my case, I fear the Catholic Church is waiting for me to die to end the stalemate. It's cruel and a sign of the bullying they've been doing for years. I've done everything possible to make amends, but won't say sorry." He has some support within his local community, with a Facebook group backing him having over 350 members. "He was fantastic for the parish," said Helen Duddy, a retired NHS clerical worker who is campaigning to have him reinstated. "If I was doing a petition tomorrow for his return, I would get between 500 and 1,000 signatures locally calling for him to be returned. It's very sad." A spokesman for the Diocese of Motherwell said, "Father Despard was asked to make a personal apology to those still living who are written about in his book and who remain hurt and offended by it. To date, these apologies have not been made. Any consideration on suitability for public ministry remains a matter for the bishop." A woman thought to be dead woke up at the funeral parlour moments before she was cremated. Days earlier, on February the 1st, 52-year-old Buji Arma from Burhampur, India, had been severely burnt in a fire at home. She was taken to MKCG Medical College and Hospital for treatment, with burns covering half her body. She returned home, but remained in a very bad state. Due to the family's poor finances, they were unable to get her into another hospital for further treatment, and a few days later, on Monday, she didn't open her eyes. Arma's husband, Sivaram Pele, believed she had died, arranged for her to be taken to the cremation ground in a hearse. He told the Times of India, "We thought she was dead and informed others in the locality to arrange a hearse van to carry the body to the cremation ground." One woman, Kay Chiribini, who accompanied Arma in the hearse, said they had almost completed assembling the funeral pyre when she opened her eyes. Chiribini said, "Initially we were scared as we'd never seen such an incident, though we'd heard some stories." The driver of the hearse, Mr. Sahu, who originally connected Amma's body from her home at 9 a.m, was called to collect her, living and breathing, from the cremation ground only half an hour later. She was taken home in the same hearse. According to the crematorium, locals do not need to provide a death certificate to perform the last rites of a family member. Last rites are hugely important in Indian culture and greatly tied to the natural environment. When the person dies, the body is placed on a grass mat on the floor, and this symbolizes the death happening within the arms of the earth. A special water is poured into the mouth of the dead, candles are lit, and a rice bowl is placed near the body. The body should then be taken to crematorium with the eyes covered. Thankfully, her family evidently missed this detail, allowing them to see her open them. This isn't the first time somebody has woken up from the dead in India. Last year, in October, a newborn baby was believed to be stillborn. The incident happened in the city of Silchar. The father, Ratan Das, 29, was told the news at the private hospital just after his wife had given birth. A death certificate was issued, and it was only when they reached the crematorium did the newborn baby start crying and was saved. And finally, did you know Pastor Jamie had a half-brother? He wasn't allowed to play with chainsaws after that.
My name is Paul Hill. Thank you for listening to Lutheran Radio UK. Lutheran Radio News will be back next Friday. Until then, every blessing to you, and goodbye for now.